Hello and welcome everybody to another episode of the Handyman Success Podcast. My name is Jason Call, owner of Handyman Marketing Pros. I'm with my co-host Alan Lee, the owner of the Handyman Journey Business Coaching and Honestly Handyman Services in the Sacramento area. As you all know, if you've been tuning in for a while, our mission with the Handyman Success Podcast is to teach and inspire by using our guest stories and real practical tips and strategies of how they actually run their business that, you know, hopefully from this, you can be inspired that, you know, if you're new, that you can make this happen and be successful. Or if you're established, that you can reach the goals that you're trying to reach, overcome some boundaries that you're kind of stuck with. And so we hope that you will get some inspiration and some real practical business improvement from our podcast here. So today we're joined by Roger. Thank you so much, Roger, for joining us. If you don't mind, giving us a little lay of the land as far as, you know, where you are, your business name, and we'll just start there.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. So my name is Roger Chong. I am the owner, main operator of Built Right Furniture Assembly and Installation. The business is pretty much, we started officially in 2020 or so. It's been kind of a long road to get to where we are, but when it officially became a business was in 2020. Started off with a bunch of different names over the years, but you know, as I kind of figured out branding and marketing in a very DIY approach, I kind of came to Built Right Furniture Assembly and Installation. And so as you can tell by the business name, we specialize in furniture assembly and installation. That really started off as basic furniture assembly. So IKEA, Wayfair, Amazon, stuff you order in the mail, come in and you give us a call and we'll assemble it. So that was kind of like the main crux or the foundation of what this particular business was when it started. But it's pretty much grown into anything that can be installed into a home or a business. So that, you know, also includes things like TV mounting, decorating, anything that's basically not structural that comes in a box that can be brought into the house is essentially what we specialize in. So that's kind of the crux of the business, and that's what we've been pushing strong at for a while now.
So that's awesome. So you're currently doing predominantly, you know, building furniture and stuff like that. Did you start out doing that in 2020, or what was that like progression like? Did you start out doing general handyman stuff and then moved into that or start with
that? So, I mean, like I said, my journey, it's been kind of a long journey. So to get kind of rewind a little bit further, I come from the world of film and television. I worked in production management for a while, you know, a lot of reality shows like Wipeout, The Bachelor, like those kind of things. I had my little, you know, career burnout kind of thing where I didn't know what I want to do with life. I needed to step away from it because my quality of life wasn't that great. And just out of sheer desperation, I jumped into the world of being a handyman. And this was back in 2015, 2016 or so. And it just out of sheer desperation. It was literally just like me jumping on Craigslist, throwing up a couple ads and just, you know, doing a few things here and there for, you know, a few bucks to make ends meet. And that's kind of where my journey into like, you know, working with tools and working with my hands started. And then I was doing handyman work, but as I was doing handyman work, there was a couple kind of friction points as I was like figuring out what I really wanted to do in that world. Even if it was the world I wanted to be in, as far as, you know, my income goes. One of them was like, I kept having to learn new things, which is great. You know, I'm not saying that's a bad thing at all. But I kept having to learn new things. So it's like somebody needed a toilet changed. And I'm like, okay, I've never done one, but I'm just going to hop on YouTube really quick. Or somebody needed like a door installed. So I needed to jump on the internet and find it. And honestly, that's how I found, you, was because I would just YouTube, you know, I would just YouTube like how to videos for everything. And that was my process back in the day. It was just like somebody hired me for a job 2 hours before I started the job. I was just like, okay, how do you change a doorknob? Because like awesome. I said, like before, I worked in film and TV. Like I barely even knew what a deck screw was. I didn't know a drill. I had like a $20 Ryobi drill like in the back of my car, and that's kind of like how it started. So it's like I really didn't know what I was doing. But you know, nobody ever called me because I broke a pipe or anything like that. So I wasn't that bad. I kept having to learn new things, and like with that, you know, you just have to buy like more equipment. I'm like, oh well, you know, I don't have You know, I don't have spackle to like patch up a hole. I don't have like drywall compound. I don't have this and that. So like, I would constantly be having to buy new stuff, and it was frustrating because I would buy it, I would use it once, and I would never get another job like that again. So it's like, you know, I really got to like limit what I do. And when I kind of made that decision, I found that like there was a lot of work for furniture assembly services. And I was like, okay, I can do this. It's super easy. I can get through pretty fast. And people were paying pretty decent for that service. I'm like, I should just lean into this because it's the one job where like, I'm not sweating bullets as I'm trying to figure it out. You know, like I'm not gonna worry about burning somebody's house down. I'm not gonna worry about like them like hurting themselves because I did something incorrectly or whatnot. Like, you know, the benefits to me just focusing on furniture assembly just kind of overshadowed all the other, you know, opposite reactions to it. So that's why I just kind of leaned in heavy into that. And that was about 2020-ish or so, you know, roughly around the start of the pandemic. And it's worked out. It's funny. It's, you know, I hope you guys don't kick me off the show, but like, I really don't consider myself like a handyman business. Because people will still call me and they'll be like, hey, can you swap out a ceiling light for me? Or, hey, can you, you know, do this and that for me? And I do have to turn down work because like, one, I haven't done it in years, so I don't feel comfortable like charging like my prices for those type of services that I can't guarantee. And two, it's like, I'm not interested in that kind of work. I'm not interested in like, you know, putting that under my belt anymore. What interests me is kind of like getting better at what I wanted to specialize in.
Yeah, we're definitely gonna have to kick you off because this is the Handyman Success Podcast, the Furniture Assembly Podcast. So
that was another thing too. Was like before I found like, you know, your Facebook group and this whole world. I didn't really have a home. It was just like there's not like a big market of just furniture assembly guys.
Right.
So I'm like, where do I belong? And then you know, after a while, I was just like, well, I'm part of the handyman sector. I'm just like this very like small like corner of it, this very specific niche of it. So, you know, I'm like, okay, well, I can jam with these guys hopefully, and hopefully they don't, you know, sniff out the wolf.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of the handyman trade though, is like, it's almost every contracting like industry. It's a niche of the handyman space, you know, drywall. So it's very common to, you know, like a handyman that just, you've got to know what you can do and what you don't do. But I love how yours is really underscored by like what you enjoy and what you're happy to do and provide that value for the client in the furniture assembly. So you're located in Southern California, in like Los Angeles, is that right?
Yeah. So I'm in the Los Angeles, Orange County region. So it's just kind of like the main kind of area of Southern California. I'm based out in Long Beach, which is like right in the smack dab middle of Orange County and Los Angeles. But you know, like me and my team, we'll pretty much service most of Southern California. Just really depending on the size of the job. Like I'll send my guys down to like San Diego if it's a decent sized job. So, which, you know, we've done before.
One question I have is, I mean, before we kind of dig into, I know we'd like to hear more about your business and your team and stuff like that. But what was the transition like, to kind of transition from a handyman to focusing on, you know, furniture assembly and being built right furniture assembly and installation? Like what did you do to make that transition like a reality?
Oh, I mean, it was pretty immediate. I would say it was like an overnight decision. It was just like one day, I think it was after a job where I was like, somebody had like hired me to like do like squeegee on like this decal onto a window, but it was a very intricate decal and I completely botched it. And I was just feeling like crap, like so bad. I'm like, this is a terrible job. And then, you know, that night I just sat down, I'm like, what can I do to like not feel this bad anymore? Where like I don't, because I never had, I never did it before. I just YouTube something and most of the time I succeeded, but this time I failed. I was like, what can I do to just like not feel this way anymore and not have to deal with like this type of anxiety anymore? And then I decided, I'm like, you know, I'm just going to lean into furniture assembly. Like that's what, you know, that was good. That's what I enjoy doing. That's what I don't fail at, you know, like I'm really good at it. So it was like that night I made that decision. I changed my business name that night. I created a website that night, just like a really basic one on WordPress or whatever. And I just decided to push it. And like the next day onward, that's when I really just pushed it. So like, you know, when I was a handyman, I had like a super generic name. It was like RBC Services. So like, it, you know, it wasn't really anything. And then that night I changed it over to IKEA installers because, you know, it was like, I was getting like a lot of IKEA stuff. But that name didn't last long because they actually sent me a cease and desist letter when they found
me. Wow, you don't want to get on like the bad side. Like you're going to get sued by IKEA.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I got a letter from like an attorney in Italy or something like that for their for their client. And I'm like, oh, okay, you know, I'm not even going to like fight this. I'm not going to argue it. I'm just going to change the name. I was like, I thought it was cheeky at first, but yeah, lawyers don't find that funny. So, yeah. And so that's when it kind of just developed to what it is now. Yeah. So it was honestly, yeah, like an overnight decision. And like, once I made that decision, I just leaned into it and I haven't really like looked back since. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like, I occasionally do like handyman stuff here and there, but it's really just for like return clients and friends that just really need a hand with something like that. Like they need like a smart door, like a smart doorknob or something like that installed. I'll do that occasionally, but like for the most part, it's really just been like furniture assembly and furnishing installations. And especially now, like I got my contractor's license. So even now, more so than before, like I'm really not allowed to like touch anything outside of that scope of work. The contract or the state licensing board is very specific about like you, once you're a licensed contractor, like you're that licensed contractor, you can't get out of that license unless you get the license to cover the additional work. So I really use that as a question. When people ask me to do stuff, I pull that card out and say like, no, I can't do that.
Yeah, I think that's actually a very interesting thing about the California law. And like, I've had a lot of people ask me, hey, why don't you get your contractor's license? And it's really because like in the law, as a contractor, you're not allowed to do general handyman stuff, right? You can do the stuff that's covered under your contractor license. So it's kind of like you're screwed if you do, you're screwed if you don't. Like, you know, you can either do handyman stuff and abide by that $500 limit here in California. Or you could become a contractor, but you can't do that small stuff, kind of like general. It's kind of crazy. So I'm interested to hear you talk about that. So when you went, I always hear the question of people that want to niche down, right? Of how do you make that transition? Because one day you're doing everything, and then the next day you're only doing this stuff. But it sounds like from your business, like you literally shut one business down and created a whole new one. Is that correct?
So I guess if you don't like that, I mean, like, you know, my phone number stayed the same, like I stayed the same. My clientele was pretty much, stayed the same. So the people that had hired me as a handyman, a lot of them were hiring me to like build furniture anyways.
Okay.
So like, as they were calling me back, it was for stuff that was still within my scope. So they needed me to like hang a picture at a really high height, or they need me to do like a somewhat complicated job, but it was still within my scope. So I guess it was technically shutting down one business, starting another, but at the same time, like it didn't really feel different. It didn't feel unnatural, you know. It felt like, it just felt like a continuation of my timeline. So I didn't really have like any, I didn't have any hiccups when I made that transition. I didn't really, have any hardships. You know, one thing was like when I was doing my handyman stuff, I really didn't have a grasp of what it was to own a business. Mm-hmm. So when I was doing that and when I was like marketing myself, I didn't really know what I was doing. So I was throwing posts up on Facebook. I was that guy in like city Facebook groups that are like, hey, I can do that for you for $5 or whatever.
Right.
I was just that guy. And I was just kind of like, I didn't really have like a process when it came to like marketing my business. It wasn't until like after I read a few books and really understood the concept of what it was to own a business. That's when I really focused on like going after my ideal client and my target audience. So, you know, if anything, I built more of a base. I didn't really lose anything because I didn't really have anything to begin with when I was a handyman. I had, you know, no process whatsoever. And now I have a much better process.
Was there, when you made that transition, was there like a down time as far as, cause like if you go from doing everything to the one thing, you know, obviously a lot of the leads and phone calls you're getting, like you're now turning those away. So there was there, I guess if you could kind of explain, was there any kind of like transition period where, you know, your revenue dropped because you're focusing now on furniture assembly and kind of figuring out the marketing for that? If you could kind of just shed a little light on that specific piece of the transition.
Yeah, that specific moment for sure. So like, like I said, like when, before I made that transition, I didn't know what I was doing as far as business goes. So like I was busy. I wasn't that busy though, because I was still trying to figure out like how to do it. The jobs I was getting was just like for very like low paying stuff. Like I think I was making like $25 an hour or something like that. And I thought that was good money. But I didn't take into account like taxes and overhead fees and all that stuff. So like I didn't really know what I was doing. So like I wouldn't say I lost revenue. It wasn't like things got slower. But once I made that decision to like focus on furniture assembly, that's when I adjusted my marketing. And I to kind of get down into the granular details. So like Yelp was a big driver of my revenue, right? So in the beginning, I would get a lot of inquiries on Yelp. I paid to sponsor my page on there. I would get a lot of inquiries for like everything. So installing a whole new theater system, patching drywall, all that kind of stuff. And like, I would throw out bids, and it wasn't like, I wasn't getting like that much of a return. I was maybe getting like a quarter of them coming back and be like, okay, yeah, let's move forward with this. But when I retooled and I focused my Yelp listing specifically just for furniture assembly and for TV mounting, it didn't spread the money out as far. You just focused the money that I was spending on Yelp. And so in turn, I was getting more clients that were just interested in just furniture assembly services. And they found, you know, the expert in furniture assembly services, because they could see that that's all I was doing. So I was generating more just by focusing. So just changing my settings in my Yelp advertising, I was able to just reach the people that I wanted to, and I was able to get more of them. Versus kind of just generalizing and kind of like throwing my, you know, shooting my shot with everybody. I was just shooting my shot with the few that would be interested in my services.
That's awesome. And so you're a contractor. So what contractor's license is that for furniture assembly?
So in California, it's a specialty contractor's license, the D34 classification, which is pre-manufactured equipment installation. Okay. The board, they kind of in their quick pitch of what the license is, it's basically anything that comes in a kit or anything that comes in a box, is what I'm allowed to touch. Okay. So that could be things like a closet system. So, you know, the stuff that you buy off the shelf.
Oh, okay.
IKEA.
Or Zippos, I assume, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Like, so, but then that also includes things like, you know, like the warehouse racks that, you know, you
wear. Oh, right.
Kind of bigger installs like that. It would include all of that. So, you know, the possibility of like the possibility to make more money on jobs is bigger with the license, because now I can go after like these larger scale jobs, you know, that I wouldn't have been able to if I didn't have a license.
I could just see someone you know, installing a fence and getting caught by the CSLB and then be like, but I bought all the material and I put it in a box and then it came box.
Yeah, you know, I had actually asked about that like before I got my license, and I was kind of going back and forth, because, you know, there are companies out there that will like manufacture a custom closet for you if you send them like the measurements.
Right.
So I was like, if I just took measurements and I ordered a custom thing that was manufactured elsewhere, could I install that? And they're like, no, you can't do that. That's still custom work. So, they're very. What I've learned about the CSLB is like, if it feels dodgy, it's probably not allowed. Like,
yeah,
that's what I mean. You have to ask a bunch of questions to work around it. It's probably not. You probably shouldn't do it.
Right. It's like, well, can I do this? Or like, yeah, it's pretty crazy. Yeah. They got a lot of laws over there. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So, is there a lot of people in that field that say that have that D34 contractor's license that are going after what you're going after? Like, what's the competition look like?
Yeah. As far as that? It's weird that the D34 license, it's so broad. In the same way that like handyman like covers so many like different kind of like skill sets, the D34, I had only recently found out that it also covers like appliance repair and installation. Mm-hmm. And I have no skill sets in appliances, but like now I know that I'm allowed to like advertise my services for appliances. But yeah, I mean, like, the majority of D34, people have, you know, I haven't done the market research to see like what the whole classification or what the whole group of people is, but looking through the website, I found it was like a pretty even mix of like closet installers plus like people that do like warehouse racks, those kind of like large installations like that. So it is a lot more commercial. It's a lot more like the type of people getting the D34 license aren't doing as much like residential. Like they're not going to come in and just build like a single sofa for like, you know, Karen in Irvine or something like that. So
little
they're
Karen in Irvine.
Jobs. Yeah.
I'm curious because I think most think furniture assembly, like I think of like, you know, household furniture from IKEA or Wayfair or whatever. But what is your job distribution between like residential and commercial? And then also in that vein, like what is your ideal job? Like when it comes in, you're like, sweet, this is what I'm going for.
Yeah. So, I mean, you guys actually caught me in a very like transitional period. And I talked about this with Alan when I had breakfast with him the other month. It was like, I'm in this transitionary phase where I'm moving from like mostly residential customers and I'm really pushing for commercial customers because what is most profitable for me are larger scale jobs where I can bring in like a larger team working in one location, building like the same stuff over and over again. So it's like, you know, before where I would just get be called in to build like a desk and a bed frame for a customer, I'd have to like squeeze in like 4 to 5 clients in a day to really make like some decent money. But now, like, if I can get a customer that's building out a new office and they have 50 desks and they have 50 chairs to go with it and they have 50 filing cabinets along with a conference table and a few TVs in various offices, that kind of job is more profitable for me because I can still bang that out. You know, my team can bang that out in like a couple days, but I would make 10 times as much money as I would going to like 5 different houses. So right now, it's about 50-50 as far as like my incoming revenue dollars. Like 50% of that right now is probably for residential customers. 50% of that is for commercial customers. I'm really pushing to like flip it so that it's mostly commercial because like I said, like you get a lot more income for a lot less work.
Yeah.
That's the goal. That means I can either just work less or, you know, have more money.
So one thought I have on this, I mean, just is what I would like, just an idea is like connecting with like owners of like commercial property buildings, you know, those big commercial buildings that have people moving in and out all the time.
Yeah.
There's gotta be a ton of those where like, I'm sure you could like make relationships and become like, basically when someone's moving in, like, oh, hey, we're so excited that you signed our lease and you're moving in, you know, here's a few like, you know, referrals that could help you in this transition. Anyway, it was just a thought that came up while you're talking about that.
Yeah. You know, that's totally a route too. I've been, like I said, I'm still in this transitioning period. So it's like, I'm learning a lot as well. And I'm finding that it's not as easy as just calling like the location itself. But that's where I'm learning a lot too. So there's like nationwide, I'm sure you guys know, there's like nationwide, like home maintenance companies that like are outsourced by like apartments and whatnot to like do the repairs and home maintenance and stuff like that. And I found that establishing relationships with other companies as a third party source is really beneficial. So like right now I'm the sole service provider for like a desk manufacturer and a couple other like manufacturers. I'm also like on the, the list of people to call for like this national manufacturer that does like, that covers like my scope of work, and establishing relationships with these other parties that get outsourced by the actual like customer itself.
Yeah.
That's kind of where that's where I'm getting a lot of my commercial revenue. That makes sense. I probably didn't do the best job of explaining that.
Yeah, no, that makes sense, man. That's really cool. And I know there's a lot of people too that have a focus on like smart home installation. They have a relationship with like as a preferred vendor for Nest, for example, that they know you're in that zip code. So when someone orders something, boom, your name is like, you know, in their like order confirmed and all that good stuff.
Yeah, so exactly that. So there's a lot of those companies that specialize in just furniture, so especially like furniture manufacturers. They are, you know, like establishing, being the service provider for them is a, like a really good relationship to lock in. So that's what I've been pushing for a lot more. So I've got, I've got partnerships with a couple smaller manufacturers. I'm really trying to like lock in bigger manufacturers, bigger partnerships and build bigger relationships. And that's kind of my journey right now, is kind of navigating my way through that and really building that.
That's okay. If you don't mind kind of talking about this a little bit more, I think it's really cool. What are you doing specifically, I guess, outside of those relationships? Is there anything else that you're doing to kind of have this focus and get more of those commercial jobs where you can make, 10 times more than, assembling the couch?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so the great thing about doing B2B versus B2C is that phone numbers and email addresses are a lot more publicly available. So I don't know if Karen down the street needs a bed frame assembled and I don't know what her phone number is. So I can't call her and ask her hey, do you need help? But I know that this desk manufacturer that manufactures desks and sells it all across the country, I know that that's what they do. That's their business. I know what the number is because it's on their website. I could probably find the email address for the operations director or something like that. So I have a way to get a hold of them. And so with that, I've really been pushing outbound marketing, cold calling, essentially, cold calling, cold emailing, a little mix of both. That's been kind of my main way of getting to those people. I put aside a few bucks, in just general, PPC advertising, in case those people are just Googling furniture assemblers near me or something like that. I haven't really gotten too many hits from that. But for the most part, just reaching out to them and not waiting for them to reach out to me, that's really what's been working. That's what worked with the couple relationships that I have been able to assemble. And then I have a bunch of ongoing pending conversations with a bunch of other people as well, or a bunch of other companies as well. So, that's kind of my process of building that portion of my business. The big portion of it is just outbound calling. It's a little scary, I'll admit, just cold calling people, cold emailing people. I've had to read a lot about sales. I've had to read a lot about understanding how to sell something. And that's, kind of a new world for me. Cause before this, it was just people will call me and say I need a bed frame assembled. I'd give them my price. I'd give them why I would be the best person to do it, but that's really about it. Whereas now I'm, trying to tell these people hey, this really is why, I'm licensed. I have a 1-year warranty on the workmanship. We do this and we do that. I really try and build my value and I have to do it in a way that doesn't sound like a douchey salesman either.
Yeah. That's awesome. And I know when we were talking, we met at that Denny's and I was trying to wrap my brain around kind of what you do and this and that. And you could even target companies like Denny's, right? To assemble all their boots, right? When they first buy a building or whatever.
Oh yeah, for sure. So this is something else I've also learned too. And I don't know if your listeners will compete on me with this, but what I found is with these large corporations and with these large, customers, so national chains like Denny's, McDonald's, hospitals, when they're building something new, they're going to be buying furniture at bulk from a specialized manufacturer. And part of the sales agreement between when McDonald's says hey, we want, 10,000 chairs across all of our restaurants, we want to buy for this price. But with that price, we're going to need you to also include white glove delivery or installation or assembly. That's kind of how it works across the board. And with all the different people I've been talking to, the end user will actually force the manufacturer or the retailer, whoever they're buying it from, to include it as part of the sale of, these million chairs, these million desks that need to be done. So that's why it's so important to reach out to the manufacturers of one of the manufacturers and the retailers that are selling the actual product to the end user, to the customer.
So you don't necessarily need to call McDonald's, right? But you call the person that McDonald's buys from, right?
Yeah. So, I learned this because I tried to build a relationship with the Los Angeles Unified School District. I'm how can I be the guy that builds all your chairs? Or what's it going to take for me to be that guy that you call when you need furniture assembled and all this? They actually have a whole department of people that are just focused on overseeing the work of furniture being installed. I'm how can I be that guy for you? I'm you wouldn't be the guy for us. You would be for the guy that we buy it from. So you got to these manufacturers. And have them hire you. We wouldn't be the ones to hire. So you would be calling the manufacturers. I mean, I'm sure it's case by case. I'm sure there's some companies that probably keep all that in house. But for the most part, with all the executives and professionals I've been talking to, that's what I've discovered is like the general, you know, way of how things work in this commercial furniture installation space.
Very interesting. Very interesting. And you were telling me when we were down meeting, you were telling me about some times when you've worked in like Catalina Island for a few people. Can you tell us maybe a little bit about that and how you got those jobs?
Yeah, so that's one of the more rare instances where the end user actually hired me directly. And that's one of the rare instances where like my PPC advertising actually worked, because they just found furniture assemblies in the area. And so they the company that pretty much, you know, for those listeners that don't know what Catalina Island is, it's a little island that's like 30 miles off the coast of Los Angeles. It's like a full-fledged town. People live there. It's like Hawaii, but not Hawaii, I guess. So like it feels like going to Newport Beach, but on an island. And so like there's a company there that pretty much like handles like all the commercial spaces. You know, they own the restaurants, the hotels and all that stuff. And so they were revamping a lot of their restaurants. And so they just found me through researching online. They found my my website. And then, yeah, I just established my relationship with them because they buy the furniture, but they're also in charge of like assembling it. And so that's why, in that instance, the end user actually hired me. And so I made a few trips out there with my team. I'm always more than happy to take a free boat trip anywhere on an island. And it's, you know, and the good thing about that is like, you know, it moves by pretty quickly, the furniture that they get. So it gives me and my guys like 2 or 3 hours on an island just to hang out after we're done with the job, because you can't go back until the boat's ready to go back. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. And so, I'm hoping maybe you could dig into a little bit more about like pricing, you know, cause like, we've talked a lot about pricing, like handyman jobs, right? But as we've learned, you know, you want to change this to the furniture assembly podcast. So can you tell us a little bit about like how you price furniture assembly and what that looks like? Because how do you know how long something's going to take you, or maybe find some insight?
I'm very much a big proponent of flat rate pricing. I understand why some guys would want to stick with hourly pricing or just charging by the hour. But, you know, like there's only 24 hours in a day. So there's like a cap on how much you can really make,
right?
You know, person. And so that's why I've always been against hourly pricing. So I do flat rate pricing, and I do it. Each type of furniture has its own price, has its own flat rate. So like a chair is a price, a bed frame is a price, you know, and it's like one flat rate. So whether it takes an hour or whether it takes like 30 minutes, it's going to be that same price. And I developed this pricing list just based off experience and just based off the averages of like what I know, how long it'll take to build it. Because I mean, the good thing about like furniture assembly, it's like, it's a lot more predictable. And this is why I really like furniture assembly. It's like, it's a lot more predictable than like you change out a toilet, you could find like a rusty pipe underneath that you have to replace. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, when you patch a wall, you might find like there's rats behind the wall and you have to like clear that out or something like that. And like, you never really know going into it, like if there's going to be an issue. But with furniture assembly, it's like, once you build a bed, you've kind of built all the beds. Like once you build the dresser, you built pretty much like all of them. So you like, you know what goes into it, you know what the pain points are. So it's like, that's why like I feel comfortable with charging a flat rate for like any dresser or any desk. All that requires is like, you know, me scoping it out with the customer. Like, is it a desk with drawers? Is it a standing desk? Or is it a bed with storage underneath? Or is it not a bed with storage underneath? And so like on my website, I literally just post all my prices. Like there's a whole pricing list on my website. So customers can go to the website and see like, oh, this is how much he charges for a bed. Like a chair, like for instance, like an office chair is like $40 to assemble, right? It's a flat rate, no matter if it takes like, you know, 10 minutes or if it takes an hour, it's never gonna take an hour. But, it's like they'll know like it's $40 per chair. So if you have 10 chairs, it's going to be 40 times 10. And usually bigger quantities, I'll mark down a little discount because like I said, like the more there is of one item, like I can just, you know, my team can just do it faster because we're just in one location. But everything has its own price. And that's based on like me knowing like on average, it takes, you know, half an hour to do this or 45 minutes to do that or an hour and a half to do that. And right. That price is based off of times what I need to, you know, make hourly to, you know, cover the business. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm just thinking like, you know, say you got, it's X amount for a dresser, right? But they have a little bit bigger of a dresser, right? Than normal. Is it like, how many, like, depending on how many drawers they have, and then you add on, like, per drawer, like, say the typical dresser has 9 drawers, and this one happens to have 12 drawers. Like,
for every piece of furniture, there is variations of it. So, like, okay, dresser, for example, they do vary in size, and people buy different sizes of all sorts. So my flat rate pricing is for dressers up to 4 drawers. Dressers up to 4 drawers. I don't have the pricing list in front of me, but it's $120 because it takes like half an hour to do that.
Right.
For dressers with 5 drawers and more, it's like $160 or something like that. Because it just an extra half hour or less than that to do that. Like with for desks, you know, you can have a standard desk, you can have a desk with a return hutch, you can have a desk that's just a standing desk, electrical or non-electrical. So there's variations of each type. And so that's kind of what I base my pricing on. But like, I'll know that if it's just a standing desk without drawers, it's going to take 30 minutes. If it's a desk with a hutch and return, it's going to take like an hour and a half to do on average. And usually in the beginning, there was like a lot of like, you know, learning through that process. And I definitely lost money on some jobs. But, you know, over time, I just kind of figured out like, no, this is the average. And I've been pretty accurate about that. And so that's why I'm really confident when it comes to like pricing my services, because like 90% of the time, like it goes as expected. There is 10% of the time that where like something will happen where like it's going to take longer. You know, like there's something wrong with the packaging. So I have to like fix like an issue that was caused by the manufacturer or something like that. But, you know, like if I'm winning, you know, 8 jobs and losing 2 jobs, as far as like, you know, what I'm making out of it, then, it's, you know, it works out in the end. So.
Yeah. So I, you know, I don't do furniture. I mean, we do furniture assembly as one of our services, but we don't like niche down and focus just on that. So sometimes we've had some crazy doozy ones. Like I remember one time someone hired us to assemble this really big IKEA dresser. And we looked at reviews. We figured it would take us like 3 hours. It took me like 6 hours to do that puppy. Like it was absolutely insane. So have you ever had a job like that where like it took you way longer than you thought? And can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. So IKEA has a closet system called the IKEA Pack System. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with it. And it's like their custom closet system. But it's just like they have the frames and everything is like, you know, you customize the insides essentially and which frames go with which. I do have to go into it assuming the customers have measured properly. I would say maybe 25% of the time they don't measure properly. They'll forget things like, you know, like walls aren't perfectly plumb, you know? And so like that half inch, like makes me not able to like push in a frame all the way. And so that requires some creative solutions to make it work. One time I had to like, I literally took a sander and I shaved down the drywall and things like it looked ugly because it's behind the frames anyways.
Right.
But like I would do that. I would literally just chip away at walls or I try not to like remove baseboard, but if I have to remove it, I'll remove it. I charge extra for that as well. But it's just things like that. So like, one job, it was like she had mismeasured by a half inch or so, the bottom of the wall, like, you know, curved out a lot more on the top of the wall. And it didn't allow me to like make this perfect like U shape in their walk-in closet. And, you know, like I could have just like went back to her and like, you got to reorder or we got to send this back or, you know, I can't do this. But it was just like, a part of me was like, it's only like a half inch. Like I got to figure this out. And so that took me, I don't know, that took like an extra hour and a half maybe to like get a solution going. And I was just drenched in sweat afterwards. But it also required me to like, I was working by myself on this project, but like I had to like lift up this whole frame by myself and kind of get in like this massive, like 8-foot frame by myself and getting it pushed into place and knocking down and cutting out like shapes of the other frame to like make it work. it was a very complicated process because each step was like, okay, this isn't working. What can I do on like this next attempt to make it work? And like that was just one of those things where like I could have charged her extra for the additional work that I was doing, but I'm like, I don't even know how to like quantify that, I guess. So I definitely didn't make as much money on that job. But like the next job, the next day, installing the same system, I was done maybe like an hour ahead of time because everything fit, everything worked. There was no problems. I was just in and out. Like she loaded everything up where it needed to be. You know, everything was just like super smooth sailing. So, you know, between the two jobs, it was just like, I lost money on one, but, and I gained a lot of time on another one, enough to squeeze in another quick job that somebody just called me about. Like, and so it's like, I guess I made money, from the next day. So it's like, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like some 8 out of 10 jobs is going to work in your favor. The 2 out of 10 is not going to work in your favor, but the universe will balance itself out. Or if, I don't know, maybe I'm being too optimistic.
No, that's exactly how I see it. Yeah.
You almost have to price your services to account for that 10 to 20% that, you know, it's just unpredictable. There's just variability in business.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I do that. There is that gap. And that's why I'm saying like 8 out of 10 works in your favor. Like, so like, for instance, the chair that takes like $40 that I charge $40 for, chairs take like 10 minutes to assemble. So it's like, a lot of time, and you might even be done in less than 10 minutes. A lot of times, like, you know, I don't know what the math is, but like it works out in your favor. And the one time it doesn't work out in your favor, all the other times it did work in your favor, it's gonna like balance itself out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know we've got like about 10 minutes here, Roger. So I wanted to ask you, I know you're pretty passionate about like systems and processes. And so I wanted to ask like what kind of processes do you have in place that makes your business more efficient and just run better for you?
Yeah. So I think, before, like when I said, when I was doing my handyman business and I was just like, all kind of like flying by the seat of my pants. I was very unorganized before. And that's when I was just like texting people like, hey, you owe me $50 for this job or something like that. They would just pay me cash, you know, like a very typical way of just kind of doing everything under the table. But there was a lot of times when I was just like missing appointments because I forgot that I scheduled an appointment this day. And so like the customer will call me like 30 minutes after the appointment starts. And I'm like, I'm knee deep in built like mounting another TV or something like that. And I can't make it. And it just like that instance just happened so many times. I'm like, I got to fix this. And, you know, when you're starting out, you're very resistant to paying for stuff because you just want to do everything for free. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, you know, I got to get, I didn't even know what it was called at the time. I'm like, I got to get a CRM. So I was just like, but I didn't want to pay for anything, cause I was just being a cheapo. But I'm like, you know what? I ended up just biting the bullet. I paid for a CRM and it was just a total game changer because, it solved like all of the misorganization that I had. So with my CRM, I use Jobber, by the way. You know, I have a form online that customers can just fill out and it's just like, it's a book an appointment button and they just fill that out. It comes to me directly. And then I can immediately right there, I get on my phone and I can just like send out, you know, I can just send back the quote and be like, I have a guy that's, you know, I have a guy that's in your area. He can be there in like 2 hours. I'm like, oh, or I can schedule like next Tuesday or something like that. Having that efficiency was such a big game changer and being able to do all of like the scheduling, the estimating, the pricing, the invoicing, all within like one app or one computer screen on my computer, really changed how efficient I was. I wasn't dropping the ball. I wasn't losing money because I would forget to show up to an appointment or something like that. That big change in my process was probably what made me feel like I had like a business versus just me like, you know, answering an ad on Facebook or something like that. So I created like this process of like the funnel of getting people from like searching my name to actually getting them booked into an appointment. And then, you know, once I'm there on site or once one of my guys are there on site, you know, it's a pretty much straightforward process. But like, I had to make it like, I might go into the nitty gritty of this, but like, you know, there's a process for like how to answer the door, how to talk to the customer, how to do the job itself, how to keep your tools organized so you don't lose tools, which still happen anyways. But you know, how to keep everything organized during the service call itself, and then how to wrap up the service call, and then how to do like follow-ups. Like there's just like a process for it. It definitely could be used for some more refining. You can definitely improve, obviously. But I found that like once I figured out like I needed like a repeatable way to like run a service call, it made the customer experience so much better as well. So yeah, finding the process of that was also, you know, important for the business. And yeah.
And how do you get your team to kind of follow?
I don't think I have a special, I think I just have a good group of guys that like, that just work with me and understand like what I'm trying to do. They just do, like, I tell them like, hey, I want, you know, I'd really love it if you could just talk to the customer this way. I'd really love it if you didn't talk to the customer this way or something like that. So like one hard rule I have is to never bash customers' purchases, even if you don't feel that way. So like if they buy like a really dinky bed off of Amazon that's like looks super rickety, it's going to fall apart. Like, you're never going to say like, oh yeah, this bed's really crappy anyways. It's probably going to fall apart on you. So, you know, don't fall in love with it too much. You know, there's other ways to work around it. Like, you know, you're saying like, oh, this is, you know, this bed's going to get, you know, this bed's going to last you, you know, through your whole time here at college or something like that. Like, never just talking bad about a customer's purchase, especially even if they're talking bad about the purchase themselves. So like those are the type of things that like I try and like my guys, and they buy into it. So it's not like it's resistant. If I come across like a guy that doesn't want to buy into it, I guess I'll cross that bridge when I get to it. But you know, so far I've just had a good group of guys around me.
What are some examples, if you don't mind sharing? Like you mentioned, like when you go up to the door, and how like you know that first interaction. Like what are some points there?
So I don't bring everything with. When I go to a service call, I don't bring up everything with me, but I have like a rolling toolbox. And like I said, like furniture assembly is really predictable. So I know what tools I'm going to need. Like you're always going to have your basics, drill, hammer, screwdriver and all that stuff. But you'll know if you need a stapler. You'll know if you need like a specialty tool or something like that. You can load that up. And I always come up with just one toolbox. Even if I know like it's going to require a bunch of other stuff, I don't want to come to the front door with like 10 bags of like hardware and all this stuff. I knock on the door. I don't ring the doorbell. You know, when they answer the door and, you know, we go in, we'll either do booties or shoes off, one or the other. And then I'll always start the conversation with a compliment or some sort of like icebreaker that isn't related to the job. So like something like, oh, I love the color of your car out there. I always want something like that. Or I love this neighborhood. My wife and I were looking at buying a house in this neighborhood, but like, you know, we just couldn't afford it. So like, but we'd love to live here one day. Just something like that before you jump into like the business of it, to really like break down like the ice wall that like, you know, customers will have about having a stranger in their house for the first time. This was especially important during like the COVID era when like, you know, people weren't used to having people into their homes, let alone somebody that's masked and you can't even see their face. Like it was really important just to build that friendly rapport. And you can do that so quickly with just saying like a simple line about like, oh yeah, you know, I used to have that bed in college. Like that's a great bed. Or like, oh yeah, I love this TV. I'm probably gonna get one for Christmas. That really helps break that barrier. So it's kind of minute, but like, you know, if you just kind of do that icebreaker and, you know, approach it that way. I found that it helps. I did testing between ringing doorbells and knocking on doors. And I found that like knocking on doors was more friendly, I guess. I felt like customers were a lot more, that helped break down the wall a little further. That could be anecdotal. I don't know if there's any science behind that, but I felt like knocking on the door and standing there with, you know, looking friendly is a lot better than ringing the doorbell and just like being impatient or something like that. I don't know. It could be me. You guys might know better than me, but you know.
Yeah, no, that's good stuff, man. I mean, I'm a, like any business, whether you're just by yourself or you have employees, like creating patterns like that, like to provide, ultimately you're providing a consistent experience to every single client. So then, you know, as you grow, it's cookie cutter. Like, you know, because they follow these processes that they're going to get that same exemplary service as if Roger was there. So I love listening to these little nitty gritty things because it's like the icing on the cake, like the little icebreaker question. One of my favorites was that was from Stephen Capps in our podcast. And I feel like I bring up every podcast is like, it's okay if I park there, like just these nuances within the customer experience, they add up and ultimately to create something that's consistent every single time.
Yeah. The customer experience is so important. Like in my opinion, like it's the work is important, obviously that's what they hired you for. But I think at the end of the day, like, when the customer feels good at the end of the day, that's what generates like consistent business for you. And that's what's so important.
Right.
I think that's what really, you know, stuff like that is what really transitioned me from being like the guy that does handyman work to the guy that owns a business.
Right.
And it was all after, like, you know, reading books and studying and learning the craft. And yeah,
that's good. So Roger, what kind of parting advice would you have for people that are looking to get into kind of not necessarily just furniture assembly, but maybe niche down their business to a specific category or whatnot, or even getting started in the handyman industry? What kind of like info or parting advice would you have for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think I definitely wouldn't be where I am now without my experiences just being like a general handyman. So I wouldn't want to overlook that aspect of it either. You know, if you're crafty and you're good with your hands and you're interested in jumping into the handyman world, I would absolutely recommend it so that you can learn what you like and what you don't like before you niche down. So it's kind of like going to college. Like, you know, you go in without a major and just figure that out while you're in there, while you're kind of discovering yourself. So I think, before you niche down, if you just want to make sure, like, you know what you like and what you don't like, then, you know, becoming a handyman is definitely that. Like you're going to make mistakes and you're going to trip up a lot. I'm still tripping up now. That's kind of like how you learn, and that's how you grow, is just by making mistakes. I would say, like, don't be afraid of that either. And when you do decide to niche down and discover what you want to be like a specialist in, the great thing about that is, like, you can research that. Like, you can actually Google a term. So, like, you can, you know, if you want to be the toilet guy, if you want to be the drywall guy, you can Google like how people like are doing it, and then you can figure out what you can do to make it better. You can see what other people are finding success in, and you can figure out, you know, your approach to being like the unique guy in that space. And so that's why I think that's the great thing about being able to specialize, is you can really focus everything, not just your marketing or your business operations, but really just like studying and focusing, because you can just limit your search to just drywall or toilets. Have to search like everything. You don't have to learn everything.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Roger, for all of your insight. It's been absolutely awesome having you on this podcast. And obviously, you know, we don't have enough time in kind of a 40-minute, 1-hour podcast here to hear your whole story. So we'll have to have you on again sometime. But we really appreciate your insight and kind of what you do for the handyman industry. And also for all the listeners out there, we thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Handyman Success Podcast. I am Alan Lee, one of the co-hosts here. I run handymanjourney.com, a business coaching and consulting platform. We currently have open enrollment to our Handyman Academy coaching group. If you're interested in that, you can also schedule a free consultation with me at handymanjourney.com. And then Jason Call is our other co-host. He operates handymanmarketingpros.com. And you can also book a free call to talk with him. He's the guy for marketing. If you are interested at all in marketing, websites, SEO, Google ads, anything like that, Jason is your guy. Go ahead and schedule a call with him there. And also, I want to let you know, Handyman Success, the brand, is growing. We now have handymansuccess.net, and we are launching into doing webinars once a month. So typically, they are the last Thursday of the month, but you'll need to go ahead and go register at handymansuccess.net. to get your name into that, and we'll go ahead and get you some emails sent out. But thank you so much for tuning into this episode. We really appreciate it. We really appreciate any feedback you also have for us. So drop a comment on this video wherever you're watching it, and we'll catch you guys on the next episode of the Handyman Success Podcast. Have a great day, everyone.